This is Kate Clinton, and I thank you, as always, for coming out. You're listening to Queer Music Heritage.
Hey, would you like to know something interesting? I know what a lesbian is. Yes, I do. There's these two pretty ladies that live down the block in that greenhouse with three dogs in the yard. And I asked them why there's no daddy at their house, and they said it's because they are lesbians. They told me it. Yes, and I seen them kiss each other goodbye on their porch yesterday. I went and asked Mama if she knew what a lesbian was. She said she didn't know. So I told her. She knows now. I think I will change my name from Edith Ann to Lesbian. I think it sounds cute. And that's the truth.
We hope this next song will make you feel all warm and nostalgic. It's a camp song. Well, it used to be a camp song, but Lisa's totally rewritten it, so now it's a camp song. Get it? Camp. Okay, I'll just stop.
We wear Birkenstocks, lesbian. We drive pickup trucks, lesbian. We've all got an aunt who's a lesbian. Oh yes, lesbian. Brings back a flood of memories, doesn't it?
Oh yeah.
We don't eat red meat except some of the time. Lesbian. We like pocket knives.
Lesbian.
We don't tip real well. Ooh.
Lesbian. Oh, yes. Lesbian.
Okay, now here's a special verse for all the non-lesbians out there.
That's me.
That's right. Even you, man. Here we go. We wish we could be lesbians.
We wish we could be lesbians.
We'd join a softball team.
We'd join a softball team. Lesbians.
But we're not tough enough.
But we're not tough enough to be lesbians.
Bench warmer.
Bench warmer. Lesbians.
That's right. Let's modulate. We throw solstice parties, everybody.
We throw solstice parties. Lesbians.
We use power tools.
We use power tools. Lesbians.
We own dogs that are part wolf.
We own dogs that are part wolf. Lesbians. Oh, yes. Lesbians.
That was Camp Song by Das Fallopia, and I think it epitomizes the definition of a lesbian comedy song, because I think the best comedy contains elements you can identify with, finds humor in our own lives, and looks at a culture's idiosyncrasies with an offbeat approach. Why am I telling you this? Because this is an edition of Queer Music Heritage like none I've done before. This is J.D. Doyle, and this is Queer Voices on KPFT, and I'm calling this month's show, Those Funny Lesbians. It's a tribute to lesbian comedy, and while yes, this is Queer Music Heritage, for this topic I'm opening it up to include stand-up comedy. Oh, before I play Das Fallopia, you heard a snippet called Edith Ann on Lesbians, which of course was by Lily Tomlin. It's an obscure clip from a 1970s San Francisco radio program called The Gay Liberation Follies. So, I will be mixing music and stand-up comedy, and for my feature interview, well, I don't think I could have found anyone more qualified, as she's almost completed her third decade of doing out-of-the-closet comedy. She's Kate Clinton. But before we get to that, I want to cover some of the early history of lesbian comedy. And I'm talking about the 1970s. In that decade, well, it was very early to be doing openly lesbian comedy material, and the artists doing it braved the waters first by being known as feminist comedians. The pioneers were Harrison and Tyler. Pat Harrison and Robin Tyler released two comedy albums, starting with Try It, You'll Like It in 1972, and following that 1 year later with one called Wonder Women. Here's a short clip from Wonder Women where you can hear them get close to the line, but don't quite cross it.
We know what you're thinking. You're thinking, who are they? Right?
Well, we're not Cheech and Chong in drag. Right. He says, yeah, look, they're Cheech and Chong in drag, right?
Well, you know what it is? Patty and I, we go on stage in many places, and they're not used to seeing women like us. I mean, we have blue jeans on, and we have that aggressive little walk, and
little
some
walk.
Of you out there may be thinking that we might be a little,
different,
you
a
know?
Little...
Anybody thinking? Who out there thinks we're strange? I mean, how many of you think we may be, you know what? Anybody? How many of you think it? You think it's not true. No, it's not true. It so happens that Patty and I met in a very usual way.
Yeah, I was driving the truck, and she was loading it.
Cut that out. Of course, most of you who know about us probably know that Patty and I happen to be feminists.
And that's not a hygiene deodorant.
No. What it means is that we believe in the women's liberation movement. Now, how many of you brothers and sisters out there believe in the women's liberation movement?
By 1979, Robin Tyler was more than ready to release a solo, blatantly lesbian album, and I give it credit for being the first openly gay or lesbian comedy album. It was on the Olivia label and was called Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom, and from it is this representative clip.
Last summer I spoke at the Gay Liberation Parade in San Francisco. Now, I am not gay. I'm not. I'm a lesbian, but I'm festive. Come on, let's face it, guys. We are two different sets of cultures, right? We got to realize the differences. Gay Liberation Parade in San Francisco. 250,000 people marched in that parade. Now, a lot of folks said, hey, they're flaunting. Flaunting. Isn't that a funny word? When a heterosexual shows us a picture of their family, it's called sharing. When we show them a picture of our lovers, it's called flaunting. So I felt it was time to share. I stood on the platform, and I was actually able to see 100,000 people in front of me. And I thought about the woman who was responsible for my being there. No, not my mother. Anita Bryant. Anita Bryant. Anita Bryant, who is to Christianity what paint by numbers is to art.
A few years ago, I was fortunate to be able to interview Robin. So I'll let her take us through going from the act Harrison and Tyler to doing her own very out comedy.
Robin, I've read that the album Always a Bridesmaid, Never a Groom was the first openly gay comedy album. How did that album come about?
In the 70s, Pat Harrison and I, Harrison and Tyler, were a female comedy team. We were assigned to ABC. We had come out of being a feminist comedy team. So we played all over colleges and so forth and so on. And the network picked us up and decided we'd be a great replacement for, you ready for this, Donny Marie Osmond. They were looking for variety show people. So we did four pilots, and we ended up starring on the Kroft Comedy Hour. And at the same time, I was political. You know, this gay liberation was happening, gay lesbian liberation. And at the time, it was gay. Then we added lesbian, then bisexual, now transgender, and now queer. So I had to gain 30 pounds just to put everybody's rights on my T-shirt. Anyway, what happened was, it was interesting, and it's actually, if you look at the history of comedy and the civil rights movements, it's happened to most of the comics that came out during their era of civil rights. We were just beginning to, as a movement, reemerge, the gay and lesbian movement. And so here I was starring on television and all these pilots being very, generically cute. And offstage, I was beginning to talk all over. And I got a call from a guy, and he said, we're having a gay pride celebration. Go say some gay jokes. And I said, I'm not doing any anti-gay jokes. He said, no, do some pro-gay jokes. And I thought, well, what are pro-gay jokes? You know, I mean, I couldn't find it. It was interesting. So I went to the celebration, and he said, get up there and do something pro-gay. Just make it up. So I got up and I did this joke about running into a right-wing guy. And he said, I think they should take all of you queers and put you on an island someplace. And I said, they did, darling. And they call it Manhattan. And that was my first gay joke. And they laughed, and it was an entirely gay audience. And so I just started to make up jokes where we weren't the object of the humor, where we were the subject of the humor. You know, humor is a razor-sharp edge of the truth. Humor is anger and truth made funny. There's no such thing as just kidding. So when people used to do faggot jokes, comics, or they still do faggot jokes, or even Eminem, you know, tries to make it funny to kill the faggots, there's no such thing as just kidding. For an audience to laugh at something, they have to believe that the premise is true. And so what happened in the 70s is I began to go on stage and turn the tables and do jokes that were pro-us in order to combat all the jokes that were anti-us. And out of trying to do those jokes and beginning to do those jokes, I was beginning to formulate material. And then Anita Bryant came along, and I'm so grateful for Anita Bryant. I am. I'll tell you something. Anita Bryant and Laura Schlesinger have done more for comedy than, you know, really, these are great women. I know a lot of people look at them and they say, oh, well, they're not. These are very important women because all of us was like a wealth of material, you know. So I came out against Anita Bryant. I was doing jokes on her. And when I started coming out and doing humor that was pro-gay and lesbian, people said to me, gays and lesbian, you're going to kill your career. Even though they were laughing, you're going to kill your career. You're going to kill yourself on television. You know, you won't be a star. And I said, well, you know, I may never be a star, but unless you can tell the truth as a comic, you can never really be funny. And so I didn't care. I just came out. And the day I was on the Kropp Comedy Hour, it was Patty and I were starring ABC Television, you know, Ellen DeGeneres' network. We were the stars, and at the news carried us. And it said, avowed lesbian. You couldn't just be a lesbian. You had to say, I vowed, I'm a avowed lesbian. Avowed lesbian. I vow it. What they were probably trying to say is out of the closet lesbian. So avowed lesbian Robin Tyler does Anita Bryant jokes. And this was on the national news right after the national broadcast. I'm so glad I came out, because when I came out, I got happy and free and funny, you know. And I didn't know I'd get all the bookings, and I didn't know I'd make a whole bunch of albums. I didn't know I'd make history. I just knew that I couldn't lie anymore. You know, when people say don't ask, don't tell, what they're really saying is be a liar. And how can you be an artist and be a liar? I mean, how can you, when the basis of art is supposed to be your truth, how can you be a liar? So comedy is a very serious business.
Of course, Robin Tyler is also well known for her activism and for helping to organize several of the marches on Washington and countless women's music festivals. I want to mention another longtime activist, Ivy Bettini. I've got a short comedy routine to share with you, but in addition to doing comedy, Ivy Bettini is a longtime activist with work spanning 5 decades. I encourage you to do an internet search on this amazing woman. But for just a sampling, in 1966, she founded the first chapter of the National Organization of Women, and in 1969, she designed their logo. She founded the first AIDS organization in Los Angeles and has been active in many other community services. There's a theater in L.A. named after her. She's an accomplished artist, and last August she celebrated her 83rd birthday. The comedy bit I have for you is from a 1976 45 called Women's Lip, and the two sketches are called Lesbians and the WLM, with that standing for Women's Liberation Movement. Now, the recording quality is not great, but I wanted to preserve it as part of this show.
Lesbians! There's a myth in society. Gay women hate men. Now, that is ridiculous. They don't have to. They don't live with them. If you're a lesbian, you cannot buy hers and herself. And once the word gets out, the Avon lady probably stops calling. But to me, if you're a gay woman, the toilet seat is always down.
Oh, yes, dear. Well, I'm getting ready now to go to my meeting. I'm going to the WLM. No, it's not like the DAR. Of course, I'll watch the crosswalks, honey. I know you worry. Bye. No, I won't be picked up. It's all women. Sit down here, you're very kind. You can see I'm nervous. It's my first time, you know.
Now it's going to start.
Oh, I don't understand this. You said, well, I thought I was at the Women's Liberation Meeting. I am? Well, then why are they discussing thespians? Yes, she was just so brave, you know, talking right out there and saying all those things. And there's such courage in the room. There's courage and inspiration. I'll be here next week. Okay, goodbye. Goodbye. Hello, dear. Huh? Well, the meeting was sort of, it's like advanced PTA. What did we talk about? Oh, I don't think you'd be to it. You would. Oh, well, they talked about, rape. Oh, that was the sky. You're right, there isn't any. Then they talked about Planned Parenthood. They were very clever, and I got great inspiration from them. Yes, as a matter of fact, I came home with such courage tonight, George. There's something I want to ask you for. George, do you want to do it tonight?
That was Ivy Bettini, and I'm such a tease. If you visit the extended version of this show on my website, you can hear, I think, a wonderful interview with her. But here's a quick quote from it.
Kate Clinton, she's my comedy hero.
I guess this is a good time to comment, or perhaps admit, that I think picking what material to share with you is perhaps risky, and I certainly do not claim to be any authority on humor. What we each find funny is subjective and is to some degree a function of where we are coming from. For example, when I was picking what stand-up comedy clips to share, I went through many, many recordings, and there were some common elements of many that only women or only lesbians will find funny. As a man or as a gay man, I just do not find funny routines about feminine products, periods, or cunnilingus. I can't say been there, done that. And here's another observation. When you're talking about stand-up comedy, it's pretty easy to think of comedians who had anti-gay or lesbian jokes as a standard part of their routines, such as Eddie Murphy, Sam Kinison, and Andrew Dice Clay. Since QMH is really a music show, it occurred to me that while it's been easy over the years, if I wanted to play homophobic songs about gay men, to find a large number of them, full of mincing, effeminate, and very stereotypical queens and faggots. But how many songs by straight artists making fun of lesbians can you think of? Was that because gay men were an easier target, or was there something else going on? In 2005, I did a show tracing homophobia in country music, and I found it interesting to note that there was an evolution in the treatment of gays and lesbians in country music that started in the 90s. And that was the revelation by the singers in their lyrics that their wives and girlfriends might be lesbian. I made a comment in that show saying, okay, let's stop and think. I've covered about 40 years of country music and we finally hear about lesbians. I'm not sure if we should bemoan that lesbians seem to have been invisible or be thankful we didn't get a lot of songs about butch dykes in cowboy boots. At any rate, the songs were much less critical, and the men were mainly just complaining about the loss of their women. But the point I was building to was that for quite a while in mainstream comedy, lesbians were almost invisible, but I was able to find one example to the contrary. I want to go next to a skit from a comedy album devoted to gay life. From 1977, it was called Out of the Closet, and while Bruce Vilanch was one of the writers and performers, I do not really consider it a gay album, but I do think it's interesting that its approach is, I think, very positive, in more of the laughing with rather than laughing at vein. The main lesbian sketch featured Broadway actress and comedian Tamara Long. The sketch is called The Fashion Show, and you'll hear Bruce Vilanch introduce it.
Out of the Closet. The Fashion Show.
Good afternoon, ladies. And welcome to the annual I, Magnin, Four Fashion Show. We have a smashing new collection here today, and we begin with our first lovely model, Tina, wearing a mauve cashmere sweater with matching pleated pants. For late afternoon wear, Here's adorable little Janet wearing a blue wool A-line dress, accented at her firm, rounded hips by a strong yet supple black leather belt. I don't know about you ladies, but personally, I find black and blue an especially exciting color combination. And as afternoon lightens into evening, we have our own darling Martha in a red matte jersey cocktail dress. Matte jersey, a sensuous, rich material cut low to reveal Martha's lovely, full, succulent, incredibly soft... yes. Well, thank you, Martha. Here's Tina again, the little bitch. Wearing a satin man-cut tuxedo, all black, which, of course, happens to be Martha's favorite color. Perfect for the butch we all know Tina really is. Janet, luscious Janet, in a simple, strapless, white satin evening gown, molded to every curve and crevice of a body kept slim and trim by unending bedroom athletics. A body which I may be getting to know in intimate detail later this evening if someone isn't there when I get home tonight, Martha! Aha! The two-timer herself, in a creamy, translucent chiffon negligee. And the gold Cartier ring I gave her on her 32nd. Yes, not her 30th, but her 32nd birthday 2 weeks ago, at which time she swore her undying love to me in the house that I not only pay the rent on, but totally furnished myself before she fell for that neurotic little dyke, Tina. Personally seen in the butchest drag since Marlon Brando slipped that motorcycle under his ass. And if that part of Martha's anatomy isn't in our $1,200 hand-carved French bed by exactly 1 hour after this show ends, then she can just park it somewhere else for the rest of her natural, or should I say, unnatural life. And I really mean it this time. I am a human being, not a checking account. I can only take so much. Did you hear me, Martha? A human being! The negligee is available in our lingerie department for $123. Martha is available for considerably less at 1565 Elmwood Way. Thank you.
Amazon, becoming brave and strong, clearly and consciously you see. B, you're so dykey, how you excite me, how fortunate a female faculty. Oh, gee, I guess it's good for me. H, how heavenly, I never knew how butchy I could be. J for sweet justice, K for sweet kisses, L-E-S-B-I-A-N for letting go of M-E-N. Oppression is no longer over me. Oh, people's political power to the personal key. For the queer you feared you are. Remember, you gotta respect your essential sensibilities. Between us is the tie, you to rin empathy. To exactly where you want to exist. Why let them drive you crazy, Jeff? Oh, he is political power to the personal cue. For that queer you feared you are. Remember, you gotta respect your essential sexuality. Between us is the tie, uterine empathy. V is your vagina, the virgin. You can double your universe until you get through to exactly where you want to exist.
I followed the sketch from Out of the Closet with an iconic song that just happens to contain a bit of humor. From 1976, Alex Dobkin taught us the Amazon ABCs from her album Living with Lesbians. In the 1980s, Lynn Lavner and Kate Clinton were probably the main funny lesbians in our culture. Between 1981 and 1992, Lavner released 5 delightful recordings that reveled in her kind of cute butch image. Hey, she sometimes wore leather in her act. I did an extensive interview with her in 2003, and I want to share a short clip from that. But I want to nest it between one of her comedy routines from her Butch Fatale album, and then go to one of my favorite songs by her, Lynn Lavner.
Butches will not go shopping, not under any circumstances, except, of course, for sneakers. If a butch has 27 pairs of sneakers, that will not stop her. Hey, you like these with the pump? Only $340,000. I mortgage my house. Femmes will get out of a hospital bed to go shopping. Am I right? They like to go shopping for their butch. They'll come home and they'll say, honey, I got you a wonderful shirt today, but is the butch grateful? No. The butch will look at her femme and say, what for? I already have a shirt. But femmes love to take their butch shopping and make the butch sit outside the fitting rooms with all the straight husbands. I have been in this position. It's embarrassing, by the way, to be a 5-foot-tall butch. Because you find yourself saying things like, yo, woman, reach down the shredded wheat, please. But you sit outside there. Now, wouldn't you think, if you're allowed to take 5 things into a dressing room, wouldn't you think a femme would take 5 different outfits? A femme will take the same outfit in 5 different sizes. Bring me a 6, an 8, a 10, a 12, a 14. Maybe it's long in the hips, big in the bust, short in the waist, long in the shoulders. You're schlepping this stuff back and forth and back and forth. It is a tremendous misery, but people outside of the lesbian and gay community, they don't have any problem with this. They subliminally understand butch and femme as a concept. I'm driving home through rural Virginia, big out-of-the-way Virginia, coming home on tour one time. We stopped at a little motel. It wasn't even a Motel 6. It was like a Motel 4.5. We go in. The redneck husband is sitting down. He's got his feet propped up on the desk, chomping on a toothpick. His wife is in the office. She's running around doing all the work. She checks us in. We find out from her where to go for dinner. And then just as we're about to leave with our key, my lover says to her, by the way, is there a mall or something around here in case we want to take a walk later? With that, the husband spits out his toothpick, puts his feet down on the floor, looks right at me and says, if there's a place to go shopping, they'll find it, won't they?
I was looking at your albums, and I decided that one of my favorite songs was Lesbian Too Long. So I'd like to, like to start off by asking, have you been a lesbian too long?
Somebody asked me if I was always a lesbian, and I said not yet. But I expect that probably, you know, I was ever the slow child, and so I didn't come out to myself until I was 3 years old. But that's the truth. I knew very, very early. They gave me a dollhouse, and I did the electric. But I suppose that everybody gets to a certain age where they just have seen everything that can be cute with fashion and cocktails, and they feel, well, I think I've been a lesbian too long.
Why is there a hint of Sturm und Drang in all I do? My joie de vivre has turned into ennui. I've said sayonara to the chutzpah I once knew. Why isn't English good enough for me? Maybe it's my angst that's finally showing. But like that silly rabbit, I'm still going. I've got clothing in my closet that Rommel wouldn't wear. I think I've been a lesbian too long. Some festivals won't book me. Hold your breath until I care. I think I've been a lesbian too long. I never met a queen I couldn't dish with. I never met a folk song I could stand. The other day I realized I can say Irvishy Vad. I think I've been a lesbian too long. There's absolutely nothing with batteries on my shelf. I think I've been a lesbian too long. I may not be Madonna, but I vibrate for myself. I think I've been a lesbian too long. There's more to life than trashing all your sisters. Perhaps one should employ this rule of thumb. Anything worth doing gets Patricia Ireland arrested. Strange. I think I've been a lesbian too long. A soupçon of suspicion in my heart in matters of the current ruling class. The FBI, the CIA, the NRA, the FDA, if it's got three letters, bud, I watch my ass. Will the INS repeal the Alien Fag Act? I'm Jewish. I always keep a bag packed. The CDC informs me that I'm safe the way I am. They think I've been a lesbian too long. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a dental damn. I play safe to stay a lesbian longer. My conscience can't be cut to this year's fashion. The lessons of the past are far too strong. I remember when Patty Duke was normal and there was something wrong with me. I think I've been a lesbian too long. It behooves me to admit, Katie Lang gives me no thrill. I think she's been a lesbian too long. She may be de rigueur, but I prefer Anita Hill. Do you suppose it's possible that she... Oh, never mind. I'm very proud to say that I'm pro-choices. That's so much more than being just pro-choice. My prenuptial agreement was witnessed by Martina Navratilova's grandmother. I think I've been a lesbian, a well-adjusted lesbian, a happy, healthy lesbian, left-handed leather lesbian. I'm amazed that I'm a lesbian this long. Am I out yet?
I Think I've Been a Lesbian Too Long by Lynn Lavner. A straight friend of mine at work asked me what show I was working on this month, and I told him lesbian comedy. He thought a minute and said, "Well, I have a joke for you." These two gay guys were standing on a corner, just passing the time, chatting, and a bus stops and this gorgeous woman gets off. She was all dressed up in a very provocative outfit, very tight-fitting, perfect hair, and looks a real knockout. So the one gay guy says to the other, "It's times like this I wish I were a lesbian."
One ringy dingy, two ringy dingies. A gracious hello. Have I reached the party to whom I am speaking? A Miss Doris Gay? Good. How are you, Miss Gay? This is Miss Tomlin at the telephone company. Yes, well, we have a little problem with your name. Well, we simply cannot print it in our listings. Well, that may well... Just a minute. That may well be. That may well be, but I'm sorry. Those are the rules. After all, children can look through the phone book, and you know young, impressionable minds. Well, I am very sorry. Well, then you're just going to have to change your name. But by the way, are you? You know. Gay? Oh, you can tell me. Come on, I know what's happening. I'm hip to the happenings. I had an uncle once who was that way. You are, aren't you? I knew it, Dyke. Isn't that what you people like to be called? Excuse me, just a minute. Just a minute, young lady. Just a minute. We do not allow such language to pass through our instruments.
After this break, we'll get to that interview with Kate Clinton I promised you. But this is a good time to invite you to check out my website. If you visit it while you're listening, you can see the playlist and follow along while looking at photos of the artists and recordings. I've always considered our music history as a visual as well as an audio experience. And this is another one of my shows where I had much too much great material for just 1 hour. So you can find a much longer version of the show on my site, about 4 hours total. Again, that's at www.queermusicheritage.com. Also, for more very queer programming, please listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night, Sunday morning, from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Oh, and if you want to see more info on a lot more queer comedy in general, I will send you no further than www.qcomedy.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much. And as always, I thank you all for coming out. I do. I thank you for coming out for 25 years. Thank you for coming out. And it has come to this. Here we are together, and It's Come to This is actually the title of our tour, and we had a lot of trouble naming our tour, of course, because I'm terrible at titles. So we put it on the website, kateclinton.com. We had a contest so that people could name the tour, and there were some suggestions that didn't make it. Antiques Roadshow.
I am very, very pleased to be able to bring you an interview with Kate Clinton. She's funny and smart and articulate and exactly the person I wanted to ask about the history and state of lesbian comedy. As a brief bio, she taught high school English for 8 years before she found her true calling, and she started doing stand-up comedy in 1981, and over the years has released a number of albums and CDs and DVDs and makes countless appearances every year. She early on called herself a feminist humorist, or a fumorist, and she couples activism with her comedy, and recently spoke at the March on Washington last month. She is the perfect one to ask about lesbian comedy. So I started out by asking how it's changed over the last, say, 30 years.
Well, first of all, when I started performing about 28 years ago and came out as a lesbian comic, no one stole my material, and it was lovely. And I think that the lesbian comedy has sort of mirrored the changes in the lesbian community and gay and lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, and that is that it's really much more interwoven in the mainstream, that so that gay audiences can hear information and material about things that aren't just specifically about our lives, that are about the economy, that are about the healthcare debates, that are about racism. And I think that straighter audiences are less homo-ignorant. They really know gay people in their lives. They've seen them on television. And so they're able to hear gay material. Really, because of the activism and the political work that's happened over, 30, 40 years, and certainly since Stonewall and before, really, that material has changed and the audience has changed as well.
Who were the influences on your own comedy, and in particular, what lesbian comics were important to you?
Well, they probably weren't out, but, I can always remember the power of just seeing a woman like Carol Burnett, like Hines, Mimi Hines, Moms Mabley. The power of seeing a woman make an audience laugh was really important. And in terms of lesbian comedians who were important to me, I remember seeing Maxine Feldman at the 79 March on Washington, and she had some funny songs, she had some very powerful songs as well, but she also had great patter and a great presence in between. And I remember seeing her do that, and I thought, I could do that. And, and I really started thinking about it and trying to figure out how I could do it, and, 1981, there I was, starting out. And, of course, one of the earliest lesbian comedians was Ivy Bettini, and I loved not only her material as about being a lesbian, but also her material about the body. I mean, she was kind of round and very comfortable with her body, and I thought that was wonderful to see a woman celebrating her own body, you know, certainly in the context of back then, and I think returned now, you know, people, women comedians really putting themselves down. And Robin Tyler was one of the first lesbian comics to self-identify on television. And, you know, I just thought she was really, really courageous. You know, I've been interested in following her career as an activist as well. I always appreciated that about Robin. It's not just about, I mean, she absolutely wants to be funny and make people laugh, but I always had the sense from her that there was a political activist component to her humor.
I credit her with having the first openly lesbian recording.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. What was it called?
Always a Bridesmaid,
oh,
Never
yes.
a Groom.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And if you don't say it, she'll come and find you.
And I got one by Ivy Bettini, mm-hmm. but she wasn't really self-identifying on
oh.
that recording.
Huh. I saw her years ago in Syracuse, New York, probably 77, 76. Eight, and she did then, but you know, maybe for a wider audience, she didn't.
Well, in the routine on that disc, it was an EP. Mm-hmm. She one sketch is called Lesbians,
mm-hmm.
and she's talking about lesbians, and the other she's talking about the women's liberation movement, where she's going to a meeting and she's coming home telling her husband about it.
It's wonderful, you know, to see the progression of. Even now, of comedians who, you know, have a level of notoriety and then decide to come out is very exciting. You know, I'm not in favor of outing, but I always feel like if it happens, okay, I just won't do it. But, and I've never been one to, you know, say she should come out. It seems so punitive. But when it happens, people are usually ready to do it or comfortable and strong in their, you know, identity with it, then I'm totally all for it. You know, people like Rosie, people like Ellen coming out, I think is great.
How has your material or you as a performer changed since you started?
You know, I think that I really can say that I have more confidence and competence in what I do. I think, you know, I have friends who are tax preparers who say, well, I don't know how you do it. And I said, well, I don't know how you do what you do either. But it's just been from showing up year after year and just working on it, writing new stuff. And I do love to write. And then taking it on the road or on the stage has been, it's just that constant practice that I'm a practicing lesbian. Absolutely right. It's just been, you know, it's been a joy to learn this particular craft. It wasn't on the career day choices in sixth grade. It wasn't even other. Lesbian comedian. I think I'll do that. My show basically is the format that it's the same form as I've always done, which I like to think of it as a newspaper that there's, you know, news of the day, there's international news, national news, there's news about sports, news about the media, opinion throughout, and even science news. I love to do science jokes, which drives people crazy who are scientists. So the form of my routine has remained the same, but, you know, I think, as I said earlier, I think the material has changed with the changing makeup of the community and, you know, gay and straight. And I think I have often done a disservice to ourselves to minimize our really huge number of allies and growing. You know, we have a number of straight allies, and that was certainly visible in the March on Washington. I thanked our allies who were here, and the place went crazy. So I do think the form is the same, but the material has definitely changed.
What differences do you see between gay and lesbian comedy?
I think that, oddly enough, that lesbian comedy is very male. It's very one person at a microphone. It's sort of, you know, a very traditional setup punchline, which is very male. And And yet gay men's comedy is more feminine. And I think that a lot of gay men's comedy is really, I sometimes feel bad for my friends who are pretty traditional gay men doing a stand-up comedy routine, because really so much of the humor that is part of our community has been from drag queens. And not that, you know, Bob Smith has to get on a wig and makeup, but I think he'd look great anyway.
He would.
But I think he'd be very cute. But I do think that the forms are sort of oddly opposite, that the lesbians are more, it's more of a male kind of traditional show, and that gay men's humor is more feminine and more of a show, and generally part of a show.
Do you think lesbian humor for some comics has gotten cruder?
I do think that it's sort of the common parlance now. The level of political correctness that was sort of during the late 70s and certainly through the 80s, I think precluded a lot of making fun of yourself, of making fun of other women, of swearing a lot. And I think right now all bets are off. But I think that's also the influence of comedy clubs in general. And a lot of the newer comedians don't have an opportunity to kind of come up through the minor leagues that, you know, people of my generation had, which was you came up through the basements of the Unitarian churches and then maybe upstairs. That was like hitting the big time for a while. Honey, we're going to do the show upstairs. And I think that a lot of younger comics have to come up through comedy clubs, and you know, there it's lots of swearing, and people seem to understand just kind of broad, raunchy sex jokes.
And heckling.
Although I don't get much heckling, and that's fine with me. But I don't think I look like you could heckle me either. I feel like no matter what I tried, a friend of mine once said, no matter how punk you will try to make yourself look, you always look like the Campbell Soup kid. And, you know, I love it when people talk to me, and I often, you know, I feel like I have teacher ears, and I actually will stop a show and, you know, ask somebody what they meant by that shout out. And it's not really stopping a show. It becomes part of a show. But I actually did have a heckler in my first show. I was talking about wanting to be a stand-up comic too many times in front of my best friend, and she actually booked me in a club, and she said, you're on in a month. And so we put a little sign up in this women's bar in Syracuse, and all, you know, 180 of my closest friends came. And I was about 3 or 4 minutes into it, and my friend Rita started heckling me, and I said, what are you doing? And she said, I'm heckling you. You're supposed to heckle in comedy. And I was like, well, stop it. It's like
that's the old high school English teacher. Putting you on the spot, what lesbian comics of today do you particularly admire?
Right now, Julie Goldman, who is on the Big Gay Sketch Comedy Show, which I think is a good start. The show's a great start, and I want us to be present in all genres, like bad sitcoms and bad sketch shows, but I don't think it's bad. I mean, I think it has some really good points. Julie Goldman, absolutely. There's another young woman who is from New York, and her name is Jackie Monahan, and she is hilarious because she's insane. She's very physically funny. Another wonderful woman is, what's her name? Amy. Help me.
Boyd.
Amy Boyd. Thank you. A wonderfully physically funny and fearless comedian from San Francisco who I just can't imagine why she doesn't have more broken bones. Certainly Leah Delaria is absolutely in the rich tradition of Sam Kinison and that kind of really confrontational, wonderful humor. You know, and sort of a little bit younger than me, but Karen Williams, who's a wonderful African-American woman who does a lot of material about being an African-American lesbian and just chides the, you know, white audiences mercilessly. Oh. Vicki Shaw is a Southerner who's just gotten better and better and does hilarious, you know, her fundamentalist Texas upbringing roots, and she's a mom and, you know, was married and that whole story. I mean, she's very, very funny. And what I appreciate about a lot of comedians like Vicky and Karen and Julie Goldman, I've seen them in action, and Amy Boyd as well. I've seen them in action on, like, Olivia Cruz's, where you get to do your show, but you also are expected to, you know, run bingo and do all those things. And they're wonderfully funny on their feet, they're just really fast, and it's a pleasure to watch them.
Well, comedians have to be very smart.
Thank you. We do. People say to me, you're brilliant, and I really think it's just because we agree. Although I had a wonderful woman come out of my show this summer and say, well, I'm straight and I'm a Republican, but I laughed.
What gay male comics do you like?
I have always loved the wordsmith of Bob Smith. He is a classically, beautifully trained joke writer. Danny Williams, who used to be with the Funny Gay Males, is impromptu and completely insane, not only on stage, but in life. I have enjoyed, sometimes Ant I like a lot. And I don't think there's a funnier gay male comedian than Margaret Cho. There you go. I'm confused, but I like her.
What do you think is your place in GOBT history?
You know, I think that we all have our strengths that we bring to different movements. My girlfriend has been an activist forever and is wonderful and sits through meetings every day, and it's just something I would just tear my own hair out and probably other people's. But she's a wonderful strategist. Oh my God, George Bush has affected me. Strategist. And so we all bring our strengths to it, and mine is to bring humor to the movement so that we can laugh at ourselves and, you know, like I used to say, make light, you know, light enough so that we can see where we're going and light enough to be able to move. And I've done that in certainly in my shows. I've been able to do it emceeing long dinners and emceeing conferences. I like to think of myself as the comedy concierge, just kind of move things along. And I don't know if you know this, but I am now a celebrity auctioneer, mostly because I'm terrible at it. I don't add very well. I don't go up in increments well at all. I lose count of the zeros. I don't remember the last bid. But I'm good at guilt-tripping people, and I love raising money for organizations.
I thank Kate Clinton for that excellent interview, and I'll make a side comment. Of all the interviews I've edited over the 10 years I've been doing this show, I think I had the least editing to do on this one. Maybe in the future I should only interview former English teachers. We're down to the end of the show, or at least part one of it, and I know you're saying, wait, what about Suzanne Westenhofer, or Leah Delaria, or Jamie Anderson, or Ellen DeGeneres, or on and on? Well, I've got a lot more great lesbian comedy music and stand-up on my website, over 3 more hours worth. Of course, you can find that at www.queermusicheritage.com, and you can write me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices in Houston. And what song to close with? It wasn't really a hard decision. From the landmark compilation album Lesbian Concentrate from 1977 is Sue Fink singing about those leaping lesbians.
Try to hide it. We want your loving. That's our plan.
Here come the lesbians.
that your heart is racing when you see our shadows chasing. Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Here come the lesbians!
Cause they mean lesbians!
Dojo, 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 dojo. Here come the lesbians!
The thieving lesbians!
Yeah.